You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24 with me, Daniel Bage, host of The Entrepreneurs. Richard Adel is the co-founder and CEO of SkyCell, a Swiss company which makes smart pharmaceutical containers used in the transport of highly sensitive treatments and vaccines. Along with sealed, temperature-regulated containers, SkyCell provides data to make logistics simple. Not only do the containers prevent spoilage, itself a multi-billion-dollar problem, but they provide the world's largest pharmaceutical companies with data on the best and most efficient shipping routes. Richard and his co-founder, Nico Ross, were inspired to create the containers after a conversation with the head of logistics for one of Switzerland's largest pharmaceutical companies. His challenge? Could you create a container that would maintain temperature when pallets of drugs are stacked on the tarmac in Dubai when the mercury rises to 60 degrees Celsius? Well, 8 years later, they are a leader in the sector, working with 15 of the top 20 pharma companies globally. Spoilage has gone from between 4 to 12%, now down to zero. Here's Richard with the story of SkyCell.
When SkyCell started out roughly 10 years ago, this was sort of a business operating in the back because supply chain was not such a focus on many industries. So transporting pharmaceutical products around the world is about temperature control. It's about ensuring that environmental aspects of pharmaceutical products, finished, semi-finished products or raw materials are kept within certain standards to prevent that they actually go bad. You want to make sure when you transport them around the world that they're fully functional. And we've seen that there were massive issues in this industry before, like 5 to 10% of shipments experiencing such a so-called temperature deviation, which means that product cannot be sold immediately to the market and or potentially be lost. And we thought that this is a huge opportunity to go in and fix this. And little did we know that there was also change in legislation. Before, pharma companies sort of self-regulated, they decided was the minimum standards they wanted to set around the world. And this changed. The governments introduced minimum standards. And such of the toughest standards now around the world are in Europe, in Brazil, in Saudi Arabia. So you see a pattern in many of these countries. The government is the sponsor of healthcare systems. And they wanted to make sure that the products that they're sponsoring and paying for actually fully work. So that's one aspect. And the second aspect was that the technology that pharma companies were bringing to the market have become more susceptible to environmental things like temperature and humidity because they were a new kind of technology. They were not chemicals, but they were biologics. Like imagine semi-living organisms that sleep at specific temperatures, like in the fridge at 2 to 8. And when you warm them up, they start working. So you want to make sure that they're always at that specific temperature when you're transporting them or storing them. And that's the opportunity that we saw. Pharmaceutical is still a niche industry if you look at it in comparison to food. But it's still a million pallets that are shipped by air around the world. So the vast majority of pharmaceuticals do actually go by value by air. So it's roughly a million pallets. And then there's obviously a lot by ocean, which is more in the chemical space, like imagine the aspirins of the world, either they're produced locally or they are actually shipped by boat. But the high value stuff goes by air. And the reason for that is you have very few production sites in the world. Usually you have one or two that can manufacture this kind of product because it's too expensive. So you can imagine a $1 to $2 billion plant. You don't put that into every country in the world. And so usually you have one in historically in the US and one in Europe. But this is now shifting to one in the Western world and one usually now in China or in an APEC country. Sort of, you also see there the trend changing. My co-founder actually built plants for the pharmaceutical industry. And so originally we wanted to bring a new insulation technology to the market. We took a meeting at one of the big ones in Basel and they said, well, do you have time for lunch? And we said, sure. As it turned out, that meeting then turned into, well, could you design a new container? And that moment we were very intrigued. Why would you need a new container? And they explained the three reasons that I at the beginning of the podcast, I was mentioning that the technology was changing, that regulation is changing, and also now that sustainability is a huge issue, was apparent to them. And so we thought, this looks like a way better opportunity than making better insulation for some manufacturing plants. So it was sort of a pivot into what we're doing today. if it's a clinical trial, we're talking about samples. Samples are usually about the size of your laptop screen as a box. So they usually travel by postal service or a FedEx UPS type service. That's actually very reliable and easy to do. Where it gets really tricky is when you go onto mass volume, you're going onto pallets, because you physically have to move a lot of volume, a lot of weight, and a lot of value. And so that goes by air. And we've developed these containers specifically to transport these high-value, very sensitive products, containers by air. Just to give you sort of an idea, the industry standard before were twofold. Either you had sort of a high-end camping box that was large, so if you put cooled elements in it and you put the pallet inside. And the other one was sort of an active fridge. You had a battery driving a compressor producing warm and cold air. Both of these systems, they had their own issues with protecting the products, which is actually the main job of packaging. And in the case of active containers, so these active refrigerated containers, they have roughly 30 to 50 hours of battery. Then you have to plug them back in. And the other solution, the high-end camping box, you had a specific amount of runtime and you could not recharge. And what we've designed here is actually something that goes in the middle, which we call the hybrid container, because you can do both. You can recharge, but it has an immense amount of energy stored in that container. So you have roughly 160 hours of performance, and then you can recharge. So you can do months of trips on that container without having to worry. As a pharmaceutical manufacturer, you obviously use the pallets, then you load them into our containers. The freight forwarder, let's say DHL or Kuehne+Nagel, picks them up and brings them to the airport, hands them over to the airline that flies it around the world. Let's say it does a pit stop in Dubai if you're flying with Emirates, goes onto the connecting plane, flies onwards to Australia, takes it out of the airport, and then it goes into customs. And customs inspection, if it's well organized, can be a couple of hours, but it could be that customs is overloaded and you're sitting there for days or weeks. Into certain countries, you expect actually 2 weeks of customs time. Although you're flying by air, a 12 to 18 hour journey around the world, you could be sitting at customs for 2 weeks. And that's unfortunate reality. And a lot of things can go wrong at that moment. There's usually a customs inspection process. Somebody opens the door and may forget to close it properly, or the container itself is not designed to protect for that scenario, and you have a temperature excursion, which means you can't release the product immediately to market, or it potentially is broken. And we've actually fixed that problem because the door opening mechanism is designed differently, as an example, and we have a monitoring solution in place, an IoT system since 2013, so we actually know where all of our containers are, what the status is. We can intervene and say, look, there's a problem at the airport in Mumbai. During lockdown, for example, we saw that there was an issue. We called sort of a chain of command that was established, and they were able to clear the goods and move them on to the consignee, the Indian government, in that example. Actually, the savings run into literally billions of dollars. If you say that 5% of products go bad or may go bad, have a temperature excursion, the first thing a pharma company needs to do is put that pallet aside and recheck it. And that chemical or efficacy check can take 4 weeks and cost up to $50,000. And if you're shipping as a pharma company 10,000 pallets, that's a lot of pallets that you have to put aside and can't release the product to the market. So you have to do a replacement shipment. You have to have a lot more inventory. So let me give you one specific example. We're working for the largest vaccine manufacturer by value, and we helped them to make their supply chain more reliable. And that saved them $120 million in working capital. So it was not about, per se, the amount of product lost, but more stabilizing the supply chain, massive savings in the working capital. So our containers are most used whenever it's a high value and very sensitive product. So that's mostly the case for cancer treatments. That is also other vaccines. Even my daughters are actually vaccinated by products that are probably transported in my containers, because we almost transport those products exclusively. So the chance that they were actually vaccinated and that my container solution protected is actually quite high. So I thought that was also, from a personal touch, quite interesting. On a general level, there's also a lot of other supporting products. For example, there's sort of a booster material that you could give in combination with other vaccines that would require, first of all, it's more effective, but second, also you would need less vaccines. So, for example, we transport those kinds of materials. We transport so-called APIs, active pharmaceutical ingredients, so that this is the raw material we're talking about here. $10 million, $12 million on a pallet in one of our containers. Just the sheer amount of value that we transport in a single container. And we're not talking about here a sea freight container with 40 pallets inside, but an air freight container with one or two pallets inside is just immense. That's why we also felt, look, we need to know where these containers are. And so in 2013, we said we have to know where they are and installed all of these IoT sensors in them. And I think until today, we are the largest operator of IoT sensors in our container space for the pharmaceutical industry. Obviously, sustainability is a core topic to me as a person as well. But I think the biggest change now is actually the importance of data. So we've collected since 2013 roughly 1 billion data points about the supply chains of our clients. So we actually know what happens on a Friday in May in a Frankfurt airport and you want to ship to Australia. So we actually have that historical data. How well does an airport perform? What's the impact on the container? What is the risk profile of that? And when COVID hit, all of a sudden, all the airplanes stopped. All the schedules that everyone was used to stopped. So we were able to go back into that data mine and sort of reverse engineer what could be the new supply chain for pharma customers. And so despite this massive disruption, for example, our clients, they had actually no alteration to the service and quality of the service. That was actually just audited again. So in our industry, that's sort of how many percentage of shipments have some kind of defect. Doesn't mean it leads to product loss, but we had less than 0.1% deviation even during COVID. Just to put things into perspective, industry averages roughly 5-something percent. That's massively better, even in one of the largest crises ever seen. So that was the power of data using predictive analytics tools and actually monitoring the shipment. These three things together, it would have been not possible before. We would not have that data.
Richard Adel, co-founder and CEO of SkyCell, speaking to me from Zurich. My thanks to Richard. You can learn more at skycell.ch. That's all for this week's show. It was edited by Christy Evans. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening and goodbye.